I will spare no effort, none, or any commitment to turn around this pandemic.
The president-elect announces new plans to handle COVID-19. This is Wednesday, November 11th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also coming your way, a new warning from the head of the World Health Organization. Australia may be doing something right in dealing with its COVID pandemic. You'll hear more about the new Pfizer vaccine. And we explore an exit of people from India's largest cities. All of that and more on today's VOA Asia. After winning a close election, Democratic President-elect Joe Biden now shifts focus to governing a deeply divided nation that is grappling with a deadly pandemic and a struggling economy. More from VOA's Brian Patton.
President-elect Joe Biden ran on promises to expand access to health care, assistance for the working poor, and to develop clean energy industries that would generate millions of new jobs. His most immediate concern, however, will be addressing the surging coronavirus pandemic that has resulted in over 237,000 deaths in the U.S., according to Johns Hopkins University.
I will spare no effort, none, or any commitment to turn around this pandemic.
Biden formed a coronavirus task force Monday to focus on scaling up testing, increasing production of protective equipment for healthcare workers, and developing and distributing vaccines. But to pass his agenda, Biden will have to navigate entrenched partisan divisions that have intensified during outgoing President Donald Trump's term in office.
The divisions are deep. I have hope that we will move on a healing path over time. It will not happen quickly. It will not happen easily.
Biden could face formidable opposition from the Senate's top Republican, Mitch McConnell, who will remain majority leader and set the chamber's agenda if Republicans win one of two Georgia runoff races in January.
McConnell could dig his heels in and not allow many liberal choices.
At the same time, Biden is viewed as a consummate dealmaker, having served as a senator for decades and as former President Barack Obama's vice president. His rapport with McConnell and others will be put to the test.
He might be able to use that relational capital in order to build unlikely coalitions that we perhaps have not seen in the last 4 years.
Biden has emphasized the need for bipartisan cooperation to work for the common good.
To make progress, we have to stop treating our opponents as our enemies. They are not our enemies. They are Americans.
But the Democratic leader will also face pressure from progressives in his own party who want universal government-funded health care and aggressive measures to fight climate change. Some far-left Democrats like New York Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez have already expressed frustration that after getting elected, moderate Democrats tend to abandon progressive causes while seeking deals with Republicans. Brian Patton, VOA News, Washington.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at VOAnews.com. The U.S. wants to send Coast Guard vessels to the seas near China. U.S. sanctions are placed against four Chinese officials for a Hong Kong clampdown. Pakistan says Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine is not suited for developing nations. Two gunmen on a motorcycle shoot down a radio journalist outside his home in the Philippines 4 years after the broadcaster survived a near-identical assassination attempt. Vietnam scolds Netflix and Apple for a lack of tax payments. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and at the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. The Director General of the World Health Organization, Tedros Ghebreyesus, warns the COVID-19 pandemic is threatening decades of progress against infectious and communicable diseases. In an opening speech to a week-long meeting of the World Health Assembly, Tedros urged nations to come together to defeat this common enemy. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
So come on, everybody. Let your light shine, because we are family.
We are family.
American singer-songwriter Kim Sledge, who led the Tongan Nurses Choir, got the meeting off to an upbeat start with this rousing rendition of the classic song, We Are Family. In an appropriate gesture of thanks, WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus paid tribute to the incredible contribution of nurses and midwives in braving the dangers of the coronavirus to save the lives of others. He struck a personal note by expressing his joy at becoming a grandfather for the first time 2 weeks ago, a joy, he said, that was tinged with worry.
I wonder what sort of world my granddaughter will grow up in. Although she knows nothing about it, the COVID-19 pandemic will shape her life and the world she grows up in.
A world in which nearly 50 million people globally have been infected with the coronavirus, cutting short the lives of more than 1.2 million people. Tedros said many countries and cities have successfully prevented or curbed the spread of the disease, but noted several countries, especially in Europe and the Americas, have reimposed restrictions to battle a new wave of infections.
We might be tired of COVID-19, but it's not tired of us. It pays no heed to political rhetoric or conspiracy theories. Our only hope is science, solutions, and solidarity.
While the WHO is focused on coordinating and supporting the response to the pandemic, Tedros said the agency has not neglected other global health needs that do not make the headlines.
But so far this year, we have responded to more than 60 emergencies, including major outbreaks of chikungunya in Chad, yellow fever in Gabon and Togo, measles in Mexico, conflicts in the Sahel, Middle East and the Caucasus, storms in the Philippines and Vietnam, and much more.
Tedros said none of the health worries and many other challenges facing the world can be addressed in isolation. He said they are deeply intertwined and must be tackled in solidarity and compassion with one another. In that spirit, he congratulated U.S. President-elect Joe Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris. He said he looked forward to working with their administration very closely. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Happening now in Asia, the United States, which has accused China of having hidden the extent of its coronavirus outbreak, called Tuesday for a transparent and inclusive WHO-led international investigation into the origin of the pandemic, criticizing its current terms. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Australia has recorded another day of no locally transmitted coronavirus cases. Health authorities say there are now fewer than 90 active COVID-19 infections in the country. From Sydney, Phil Mercer has more.
For three consecutive days, Australia has recorded no new cases of community transmission in its relentless fight against COVID-19. Victoria, which was at the centre of a second wave of infections, has reported its 11th consecutive day of no new cases or fatalities. More disease control restrictions have been eased in the state capital, Melbourne, as one of the world's longest coronavirus lockdowns comes to an end. But some restrictions remain. Masks are still mandatory in Victoria, and authorities say that Remembrance Day services to commemorate the end of the First World War on November 11 won't go ahead because of limits on gatherings. Large crowds will also be banned from Sydney's famous New Year's Eve fireworks. The midnight display will go ahead, but will be much shorter than normal. Prime harbourside viewing areas for the New Year's fireworks display will be exclusively reserved for frontline health and emergency workers. New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian.
We'll be releasing final details very shortly, but we wanted to make it clear that unless you've been given a ticket to one of the designated areas or unless you have a booking at a restaurant or a cafe, please do not expect to go to the CBD for New Year's Eve.
Australia has detected 27,600 coronavirus infections since the pandemic began. 907 people have died. Health officials have said four main factors contributed to Australia's relative success in containing the highly contagious virus. The closure of its international borders to foreign travellers in March, mass testing, sophisticated contact tracing, and adherence to distancing and hygiene protocols. Many borders separating Australia's states and territories were closed to curb the spread of the virus. Queensland authorities said Tuesday they were hopeful of allowing travel with Victoria early next month. Officials in South Australia have also been meeting to discuss the reopening of its border with neighbouring Victoria. Australia's international borders aren't expected to reopen until next year. As summer approaches, health authorities are urging Australians not to be apathetic or complacent about the dangers of COVID-19. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. An unofficial tabulation of the vote from Myanmar's general election showed Tuesday that the ruling National League for Democracy Party of Nobel Peace Prize laureate Aung San Suu Kyi won an absolute majority of seats in parliament, giving it a second five-year term in power. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Pharmaceutical company Pfizer announced Monday that late-stage testing on its potential COVID-19 vaccine is so far indicating 90% effectiveness. The positive news in the fight against the coronavirus came on the same day President-elect Joe Biden announced his team of public health experts that will advise him on handling the pandemic as cases surge across the nation. Could this vaccine be a game-changer? VOA's Lori London asked that of Dr. Raj Gandhi, infectious disease physician at Harvard Medical School, advisor with the Infectious Diseases Society of America, and a member of the National Institutes of Health COVID-19 Guidelines Panel.
You know, I think it very well could be. I'm excited to learn more about the details of the results. You're right, the top line headline looks very promising. 90% is actually a greater benefit than that some of us initially thought might be seen. So initially, people were thinking we might see a 50 to 60% efficacy, and this is much higher. And if that's borne out as we get the detail, that really is very, very promising. A few things to note that we need to know the answers to. Did it prevent mild disease or did it prevent severe disease? Of course, it's much more important to prevent severe disease because that's where the benefit is the most important. Does it reduce the level of virus and when you get the disease, and then does it prevent transmission? And then probably last but not least, by any means, is how long does the protection last? That's a question for which they won't yet have an answer. This is just too new to know the answer for how long the immunity would last. And then lastly, and importantly, what's the safety? They made an announcement that they want to collect a few more weeks of data to really be able to say with confidence what the safety is. The FDA, I think appropriately, wanted at least 2 months of follow-up. And so that's a few weeks from now, later on in November, that they'll reach that time point. I think they should even look at safety even further out, although the first 2 months is important because a lot of events, if their safety events happen, you know, within a few weeks to a month or two.
And regarding distribution, I guess it's a little too early to talk about that.
No, it's not too early in that. I think plans have been made around distribution, but now the details really bear this out. We have to think concretely about how to deliver vaccines, and this particular vaccine is one that has to be held really quite cold, and it is a two-dose vaccine. So thinking through the logistics is really important, and that's a good problem to have. In fact, it's not a problem. It's a good thing. The amount of vaccine, they are pretty clear. They're going to ramp up production as quickly as possible, but there'll be some time before we have really the hundreds of millions of doses that we need to immunize the whole population, and we just need to know some more about the details about it, how effective it is and how safe it is before we can really go down that route.
There was a lot of news about the coronavirus coming out on Monday. We know that we're hearing some dire numbers going forward into the winter, and President-elect Joe Biden came out and announced his approach and his upcoming task force of people that he wants to be spearheading this, but he also did talk about a dark winter. Would you say at this point, basically, the Pandora's out of the box for the next coming months and that there's not much that we can do about what is already here for the next couple months? Are we still at high risk?
Well, the numbers are definitely concerning, but I do think there are things we can do, and I am optimistic that if we do those things, that we can begin to reverse the trends right now, which are very disturbing. So, as you said, the numbers are well over 100,000 cases per day, which is way too high, and even more concerningly, hospitalizations are rising and deaths are more than 1,000 a day. I do think that with forward-thinking, clear messaging, coordinated responses, that we can get control over this, and that's why the Infectious Diseases Society of America and its HIV Medicine Association, and I'm the chair of the HIV Medicine Association, just sent a letter to President-elect Biden, really outlining four or five pillars of what we think it would take to get an effective response. And so I do think there's a lot that can be done about this.
What did you think overall about Biden's proposed approach, the people that he is tasking to take this on?
I am cheered by the fact that he's selected a really expert group of individuals who have deep experience in healthcare, public health, and so I definitely think that's the right next step. One message that the Infectious Disease Society of America and HIVMA, HIV Medicine Association, really want to promote is that advancing a national response plan that's really led by public health and scientist leaders is critical. This is a public health emergency, and so you need public health leaders and scientists to lead the response. I do see that as a positive direction of this task force. It really is a public health and scientific leader response to this pandemic, so I do support that.
Do you still think, though, that we'll be dealing with coronavirus for the at least near future?
I do. I think, you know, this is a pandemic that's going to take a coordinated response, but I do think that even though the vaccine, I'm much more optimistic than I was before that the vaccine will be effective, I think we're going to be living with this for some time, and it's hard to predict exactly how long, but at least we know some of the tools from the very beginning do work: masking, social distancing, contact tracing, testing and contact tracing. But then when augmented with the vaccine, I'm more optimistic than I was before Monday.
VOA's Lori London speaking with Dr. Raj Gandhi, infectious disease physician at the Harvard Medical School.
A message from your friends at VOA Asia. Can the coronavirus survive in cold weather? Can the virus be spread by mosquito bites? Is there a vaccine or medication that prevents it? Is there any medicine that cures it? The answer to all of the questions is no. The best steps to take: wash your hands, cover your cough, stay at home if you're sick or advised to by local authorities. A message from your friends at VOA Asia.
Now on VOA Asia, as tens of thousands of employees in India continue to work from home during the COVID-19 pandemic, some professionals are leaving the South Asian nation's mega cities and going to the hills or beaches, not just for rushed vacations, but to set up their work bases in places where they don't need to stay cloistered indoors. It's giving a boost to small hill towns and raising hopes that the trend could reverse the massive influx into big cities. Anjana Prasricha talked with some professionals who have gone to work to small hill towns.
Taking a trek in the Himalayan mountains with his friend on the weekend or before work is not unusual for information technology professional Divyan Jain. He says it is a significant change from his life in Bengaluru since the COVID-19 pandemic.
No friends, no life outside home. So it was affecting mental stability personally as well as professionally.
When travel resumed, Jane headed to the hills of the North Indian state of Himachal Pradesh to work from a more relaxed environment.
I can't explain. I feel happy. Productivity is definitely up. Even at the end of the day, I don't feel stressed at all.
Many, like Jane, are going to small hill towns that are relatively unaffected by COVID-19 as the work from home norm continues in India's pandemic-scarred cities. A group of workers from an IT company left the outskirts of New Delhi to work for several weeks from Bir, where net connections are as good as those in cities. Their families accompanied them. Gajendar Nagar, the chief executive officer of SOFOR's IT services, says the decision was easy.
If you can find an internet connection anywhere on this planet, and if you have to work remotely, then why not go to a place where you can roam around, you can live your life, not locked down inside your home, wherein all you can do is go from one room to another room.
In Bir, the children can play outdoors. The team can visit or work in a cafe. The group spent their first weekend in a nearby village seeing pottery being crafted. Shalender Singh from the group says the experience is liberating.
You're out of a cage sort of thing, because I'm sitting here, I don't have to wear the mask.
Himalayan towns that saw business plummet after the pandemic are encouraging the new trend of vacations, combining work with a vacation. Ankush Rana, the franchise owner of Zostel Hostel in Bir, is getting many inquiries.
There has been a shift of mindset. The real estate business of Gurgaon, Bangalore, Mumbai, they are seeing a lot of too late boards out there, and a lot of co-working spaces, office spaces are not that busy. So I'm sure people are moving to tier 2, tier 3 cities now, and their first preference would be either a beach in the winters or a nice hamlet in the Himalayas.
Life in small towns also helps overcome the social disconnect the pandemic has led to in big cities, says Singh.
If I want to step out and just take my laptop and sit under the sun, then I see different people coming here, checking in, checking out, and saying hi and hello.
Some employers, like Nagar, are willing to encourage staff to relocate to smaller towns.
They can have a very good life, close to nature, good food, fresh environment, less polluted air.
It remains to be seen if that trend takes hold. If it does, it could reverse the influx into mega cities that have long been the mecca for job seekers. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Thanks for being with us on VOA Asia. Vice President-elect Kamala Harris made history this week when she became the first woman ever to win election on a presidential ticket. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports on the path that brought Harris to the second most powerful position in the U.S. government.
Vice President-elect Kamala Harris.
While I may be the first woman in this office, I will not be the last.
The 56-year-old Harris thanking her running mate, President-elect Joe Biden, and voters for choosing her to become the first Black and Indian American woman to serve as U.S. Vice President. Barbara Perry, University of Virginia.
We've had women at the Supreme Court. We have Nancy Pelosi as the Speaker of the House in Congress, but never in the executive branch have we had a woman vice president, and still not president. But not only that, but to have a woman of color, a woman from immigrant parents who came to this country for a better life.
The daughter of an Indian mother and a Jamaican father, Harris grew up in Oakland, California. A mural of her now on the school she was bused to as a child as part of racial integration efforts. Democratic Representative Barbara Lee.
But she's broken so many glass ceilings for so many women.
A graduate of Howard University, an all-Black college in Washington, D.C., Harris became the first Black female San Francisco prosecutor beginning in 2004 and then California Attorney General in 2010. Harris first made history in California when she was elected to the U.S. Senate. University of Texas professor Shannon Beau O'Brien.
It's important that people see people in power that look like themselves.
A new global role in the White House, celebrated halfway around the world in her ancestral village in India. Catherine Gibson, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can like us on Facebook, VOA Asia, follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia, and find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.